Nordic Sustainable Economy Podcast Series, delivered by Nordic Council of Ministers.
Dear listeners, warmly welcome to our podcast series Nordic Sustainable Economy, reflecting economic and societal interactions in the Nordic and Baltic region. My name is Christer Haglund. I'm the director of the Nordic Council of Ministers office in Estonia. Talks around the importance and performance of business and economy very often tends to center around interest rates or growth prospects, or profit, efficiency, new products and so on. But there is so much more to economy than this. And with the help of our guests from abroad and in Estonia, we shall do a health check for economy to see if its foundations hold strong for building future-fit economy. With me here in the studio, I have Kristel Krostyk, who is the successful founder and chief testing officer for the IT company Testlio. Warmly welcome, Kristel. So glad that you were able to join us. And I have to say, such a wonderful title you have. Could you, Kristel, tell us a little more about yourself and your company?
Of course, it's a pleasure to be here with you today and discuss happiness and trust in work and life. So I am the founder of and the chief testing officer of a company called Testlio. And Testlio is the originator of network testing. And our unique offering serves customers from all over the globe. And we have a global community of software testers that are connected through our technology and through our platform to lots of customers who need to make sure that the customer experience is exceptional.
Very good. Thank you, Kristel. Jari-Pekka Kukkonen, head of executive education from the Estonian Business School, is also here with us today with more than 20 years of international experience as a trainer, manager and entrepreneur. Welcome and good to have you here, Jari-Pekka. How is it? Is there a healthy demand for executive education in Estonia?
Thank you very much for inviting this nice discussion round. Yes, happily I can say that the demand is increasing, and of course the profile for executive education is also changing. I think it is very much changing in the line of these themes that we are discussing here today. So I'm happy to see that this executive education is following the global and Nordic trends in the management.
Thank you, Jari-Pekka. And last but not least, I want to welcome Ulf Andreasson, senior advisor from the Nordic Council of Ministers Secretariat in Copenhagen. Welcome.
Thank you.
Today we are going to talk about trust and happiness in private and business life. Quite often talks about businesses and economy center about around hard facts and figures, but more seldom about people behind this terminology, behind the facts and figures. But today we will make a difference, since after all, it is human beings that deliver the results, good or bad. But one thing is also for sure is that motivated people tend to deliver more than unmotivated. But are there also other drivers behind success? Happy people are generally speaking well motivated and therefore productive, efficient and creative. How are trust and happiness related? Are these concepts relevant in a business world? Could you, Ulf, you have been writing a booklet named Trust, the Nordic Goal. So could you perhaps begin explaining for us what this trust really is all about?
I'd be happy to. Let me just first say I'm very happy to be here. This is actually my first visit to Estonia, so I'm especially glad to be here. When you talk about trust, I mean, it's common sense that trust, you trust things differently. For example, you trust one person more or less than another person, and you trust also groups of individuals differently. For example, you might trust your neighbors more than your colleagues or the other way around. Those are our people. But you can also ask yourself how much you trust certain organizations and institutions. For example, how much do you trust the government in your country? Or how much do you trust the police or media or the local authorities? This will also change from individual to individual. The common denominator here is that we are talking about trust in people or in institutions that we know something about. We have either met them, we have read about them, or we've heard people talk to people that have met and interacted with these people or institutions. And in the research world, this is referred to as particular trust. And that is that we have met them or we know something about them before we interact with them. So we have a notion of how much we can trust them already before. But when I wrote the book, it mainly refers to something else. It refers to how much do you trust the person that you meet on the street, the person that you've never interacted with before, the person that you know nothing about before talking to that person. And that is often referred to as general trust or social trust. And that is different from the particular trust. That says something, the general trust says something, how you view the morale in the society that you live in. And that is important for a society that you have high levels of this general or social trust. Research has pointed to that it has very beneficial effects for the economy. And that mainly comes down to that you don't need as many lawyers, police officers, security guards, etc., to keep things running, to fulfill contracts and people to feel safe. And instead, you can use these people to more productive jobs. And that will spur the economy. And it has been some research done on how much this is. And perhaps we shouldn't take those figures too seriously, but it matters to the economy. It has an impact. But not only for the economy, it also has a positive impact also for society as such if you have high levels of social trust. These societies with high levels of trust tend to run smoother, they have lower levels of crime rates, people tend to pay their taxes in these societies, and in general, people do things that sort of reinforces democracy. So it's good also for society, but furthermore, it's also good for the individual. There is research connecting high levels of trust with happiness, as we have mentioned, but also a feeling of self-control, that you're in control of your life, you feel empowered in high trust level societies. And the reason why my report was called Trust the Nordic Gold is that the Nordic countries tend to have the highest levels of trust in Europe and the world, and this has such beneficial effects that it is gold for our societies.
Thank you, Ulf. Very interesting. Christel, does this make any sense to you?
Absolutely, it makes a lot of sense. And as you were just talking, I remembered immediately the beginning of my company, Testlio, right? So I started my company more than 8.5 years ago. I was working as a software tester in London. I was super passionate about it, and I was having the goal of becoming the best tester in the world. And as I was going to different meetups, different conferences, and putting my skills into practice through different online platforms, and just showing my testing skills, I realized that there were a lot of problems, right, in these different platforms. And that initiated me to start my own company. And so these competitors of ours, my trust in them, basically, right? Because they were not valuing my services as a tester, and their payout models were just set up in a wrong way that to me as a tester, it sounded so wrong. So what happened was that I went to a hackathon, and then Testlio had a quick takeoff. And then when we started our journey and reaching out to customers, the beginning was really, really, really hard, because there were customers out there that had been using our competitor services, and they knew what was our unique offering, but at the same time, they were like, okay, there is this, there are these two founders from Estonia. They have a bit of software testing experience. Like, they're super passionate about, like, why should I trust them? But then, like, my eyes were just on fire when I talked about software testing and my experiences that could resonate with so many stakeholders in our customers' companies, that they basically gave us a chance. And when we proved them that, yes, we are better than any of our competitor in the market, then Testlio's just started growing. And today, Testlio's apps, the apps that Testlio tests, are used by more than 2 billion people around the world. So we work with some of the biggest companies in the world, like Microsoft, CBS, the NBA, Hotels.com. And this, all this in these 8.5 years has been built thanks to like trust, right? Like, our customers trust us, and like every potential customer that sees us, they see like we have case studies on our platform. They see the people that are building the company. It's the story that they so easily resonate with, right? Because like, I built this company from a personal problem. Like, I never dreamed about becoming an entrepreneur, but when I saw there were all these issues in my industry and testers were not treated fairly, like, I had to do something about it, right? And so that was a way for me to connect with these potential customers. And today we are where we are. Testlio is growing. We have more than, so on one end, we have more than 10,000 testers globally in our testers network that test our customers' products. And we also have a team of more than 135 people that build the platform and serve our customers on a daily basis. So, and that has built, like, our company is built on relationships. And that's one of the things that our customers bring out quite often as well, that with Testlio, you sense the people, that like, you feel that these people are your people and you can trust them. And we just always meet their expectations. And like, if we feel that we cannot do that, then we communicate and we bring a lot of transparency into this equation. And here we are.
Thank you, Krista. Sounds wonderful. Jari-Pekka, how is it in your business? Is trust an important concept in your education, for example?
Yes, and I think we, from Krista's speech, we could recognize how this trust can be transferred to real capital. It's a social capital, which is, I think, very, very necessary in our world. It's a cliché speaking about our world, and cliché to speak about rapid changes and so forth. But trust is needed when we implement new innovation, and trust is needed when we apply the sort of leadership that we need in our time, that we really try to find what are the people's real motivation and interest. So this is from heart to heart, sort of conversation between all the stakeholders, and this definitely needs trust. And in education, I think if we speak about that, that was about the field of education that we're dealing with, leadership and change management and innovation management. So those issues were related to that, but education itself, I think it's rapidly changing again, so that there are so many providers in the market, and there are predictions that the education market globally will consolidate very heavily in the future, in the nearest future. And how does it consolidate? I think it's consolidating around the big brands, which are, of course, carrying a lot of trust in the brand image. So that is, I think, a trend in education business that definitely will have a great effect on this business.
But thank you. But then, who is responsible for this positive concept, trust, and who should foster it, Ulf?
Yeah, I think that points to something that the other Pekka said. You just mentioned the stakeholder perspective, and I think that is extremely important. I remember reading a quote from Milton Friedman, the economist in the 1970s, and he said, and it's quite famous, he said, the business of business is business. And that means that the company, its role is to make money. And I think we have another perspective to that, which is the stakeholder perspective. That means that you have also responsibility, not only to your customers, but also to your employees and to your owners. But it expands even further. The stakeholder perspective is about understanding that you're a part of also society that you operate in. You have to have good relations with authorities, local organization, and so on. And that's, I think, how you in the long run also, that's at least one good perspective of building trust.
But what are then the cornerstones on building trust?
So when I think about building relationships with our customers or building relationships with our employees, it's all about, to me, it's all about being yourself and being honest and not trying to hide anything behind the poker face, but actually telling about things the way we are. Like over these years, as any startup or as any company, like we go through this crazy roller coaster, right? Like on one day you're on top of the world, and on the other, the next day you can be on a sinking ship, right? And at these times, you may feel like your colleagues are going to lose trust in you. But as far as you keep going and as you keep coming up with solutions, then I guess that you can still like keep building that stronger trust that, hey, yes, we have hard times, but we are always able to come out of them. And so transparency, communication, just being yourself, I think, are the key cornerstones for me when I think about building trust. And it comes to like talking to potential customers. Like even when we started with Tesla, right? We like one of the earliest customers for us was a mobile agency that had been working with our biggest competitor in the market, and they were so aware of like our functional capabilities from the platform, but they so much believed in our vision and that we want to treat our testers fairly that they decided to take a chance on us, and we proved them right. And so we just kept going. And obviously over the years we've failed to communicate our customers in advance. Like if we have not been able to meet the deadlines or something, but we always learn and we always are aware of the situation, and we try not to hide anything, but instead like communicate as much as we can. And today our company is fully distributed by design. So we have our global employees are now in more than 25 different countries. So you can imagine like a lot of companies, obviously after COVID became distributed, and now we are this by design, and we have taken a lot of practices into account. Like we do weekly recap emails where every team talks about their achievements, like their biggest challenges, their biggest wins. We have like Testlio connections where we just random people within Testlio from different teams that don't get to collaborate at all, they just get to connect and talk about their hobbies or their interests, and it's just, this is all that builds that trust within companies. It's a wide topic, I know.
Yeah,
I'll stop now.
Thanks. Yeah. Communication is so important. You are listening to a Nordic Sustainable Economy podcast series delivered by Nordic Council of Ministers. Today we are talking about trust and happiness in business and private life. Jari-Pekka, trust and happiness are these concepts that go hand in hand.
Yeah, I think research says, like Ulf said it, that they go hand in hand. We can sort of have a negative exercise that can we be happy without trust? I can imagine it is very difficult. So it's very, very basic need of human being to be able to trust and then look from that perspective, and this is also, this trust is, according to some research, it's leading to more integrity in people's behavior also. So they will, like Krister said, that you have to walk your talk. So how can you walk your talk if you are afraid to say what you really think about issues or execute necessary decisions, for example, as an executive, if your view to matters is biased because of lack of trust from some stakeholder?
If I could just fill in on one thing that struck me, and that is I read a research recently, and it's about the relationship between trust and happiness. In life, good things and bad things happen to us. And sometimes, unfortunately, bad things happen. We become unemployed, we get ill, we are exposed to things that make us more unhappy than we were before we were exposed to it. And research points out that if we live in a society where there are high levels of trust, we are not so negatively affected by this as if we live in a society where we have low levels of trust. We become more unhappy if the same thing happens to us in those societies where we have low levels of trust.
I'm always surprised that politicians in our countries, they don't really have these concepts on their agenda, like trust and happiness, even though the voters would like to have a trustworthy leaders and be happy. Do you agree with me, and why is it like this?
I could have a view on that. The Nordic countries, we are fortunate to have high levels of both happiness and trust in general, and it's just as you say, it's not on the political agenda. It's just lucky outcomes of other things, and we benefit from that. So it goes much deeper, and it goes back to sort of what societies we have created. But the good news is that happiness is actually getting on the agenda all over the world. And there's governments that have formed coalitions, so to speak, to promote happiness as a political motivation rather than just GDP and these measures. I know New Zealand is taking a lead in that, but also some of the Nordic countries are involved in that project.
Is it something like a NPS score that, like we do quarterly reviews on our team's happiness, basically, right? Like we want to ask them questions like, how likely would you be recommending Testlio to your friends, right? Like, so they could work for us. Is it something like that?
That is a very good question. That is the key question. So we've asked some people working for the Happiness Research Institute to give us an overview. How does this work in practical terms? And the report is not finished yet, but as I understand it, it can be work a bit differently. You can either look from it on a sort of national level, what seemed to have a positive impact on people's happiness. But you can also go down in sort of certain decisions. Should we build a park here or should we build a school here? And you ask people sort of what would make you most happy. And there are levels and there are different ways of doing it, but the report is not finished yet, so I don't have
but
a
yeah,
full
it's,
answer.
It's, like as you were talking about it, like it reminded me like the journey of Testlio as well. Like as we build our product and as we build our product for our customers and for our global network of testers, we constantly have to validate, right? Like is that feature really the top priority for our customers or for our testers, right? So we constantly communicate with them and we do not keep them in blind and then just like release something that will make them unhappier, right? So we try to communicate a lot, and I guess that has also led us here where we are today. Testlio is growing. We have a growing momentum, as well as we just did our NPS survey, and our employees are the happiest ever right now.
Yeah, it is a bit like that, actually. It's like the politicians becoming social engineers, and instead of, well, not only focusing on happiness, of course, but partly at least in their decision-making, focusing on making the population.
But what then in business? We know that you can, of course, it takes a lot of effort to build trust. But it might take an hour to lose trust.
Exactly. And I guess with when you start the company, for example, then as I said, in the early days, your customers and your investors or your like your first employees just have to take a chance on you. Like they will hear about my story, how I was born in a small village in Estonia with about 2,000 people, and how I constantly kept pushing the limits, how I went to work for like a company in London, and how I was constantly like trying to keep moving forward in life. And then they kind of see my ambition, they see like who I truly am as a person. And I think that also has helped to build trust in me. And so when we, I don't know, hired our first employees, for example, it was, our first employee came to live with us in Austin, Texas for a month. So we could just spend time together. And so he just wanted to make sure that he came from Skype, right? And Skype had like this crazy success story, and he wanted to make sure if Testlio is going to have a similar like kind of pathway, because time is limited for all of us. And so you want to make sure that you spend your time with people that you can trust, that make you happy, that really walk their talk.
But if you lose the trust, Jari-Pekka, can you rebuild it?
Yes, there are these famous sort of numbers 1, 10 and 30, sometimes 1, 10 and 50, for example, meaning that if it takes €1 to sell an existing customer, you need to invest €10 to find a new customer. And if you want to gain back a lost customer, then it is, again, many times more expensive. I think it depends on the reason how quickly you can regain the trust, because in our days we are vulnerable. I think despite our honest and genuine leadership and actions, then IT is a big part of our life, and it's of course very vulnerable to attacks, and people, our companies can very easily lose the trust without their own reason, really. So I think this is an interesting aspect that if we take into account in risk management, that another aspect that what are the possibilities to lose trust. I think it can add something to this kind of risk analysis, perhaps provide some new angles. It is very interesting.
Well, if I can have a word there, something I've been thinking about when I listen to you, and especially with communication and transparency, that brings us to something that I think is of extreme importance, and that is leadership. I think that is sort of in many ways the key aspect. And sometimes, I don't know if this is controversial or not, but I think that sometimes there's too much focus on in our part of the world on this American management literature and these things. Well, leadership is something deeper in my understanding, that is has to do with values, it has to do with culture, it has to do with processes. So that is something that I think is very important.
Jari-Pekka, could I ask you, since you are originally from Finland but living now here in Estonia, do you see differences between the Nordic countries and Estonia when it comes to trust and happiness?
Of course, there are differences, and I have been thinking it every now and then that what has changed. And from those days, when I came to Estonia at the end of 90s, it has changed tremendously. So nowadays you can be almost 100% sure that if you lose your purse, you will get it back. And with all the stuff inside still intact, that was not the case at the end of 90s still. So it has changed a lot. I don't know how this it was the first trust and then became this success of the country in growth of GDP, or was it vice versa? Somehow they are at least going hand in hand.
Actually, I just wanted to talk to Ulf's point about leadership and like how leadership can make such a huge impact, whether you lose trust or you gain trust, right? And you talked about the mission and the vision and the values, and I can totally speak to it because like many years ago, our company had raised funding and we were growing quickly, but we couldn't come up with the like grow fast enough in terms of the product, and our and then we started facing some challenges, and we had to also face some layoffs, unfortunately, which was very, very hard times for us. And at that time, I remember as a CEO of Testio, that was like one of the hardest times for me as a leader, because I felt that I had disappointed and like basically told or given wrong promises to the people that that had joined our mission, right? And that was the time when after the layoffs, we also had to talk to our team about this, like what happened, and there was there were people that just didn't believe in us anymore, and people left. And as a leader, I started like obviously not trusting myself too much. I kind of wasn't sure if I am going to be the right person to keep going and keep leading Testio. But then after all, we decided that, okay, what's going to be our plan, right? With my founder, with my other co-founder, Marco, we decided to have a clear pathway, like, hey, here's our mission, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get to profitability, and here's how we're going to do it. And we communicated more and more with our employees about our challenges, and that's the time where we really built a lot of transparency into Testio, and not like trying to hide anything, because we knew that our team can't help us if we don't speak to them the truth, right? Like what is happening, like what is keeping us up at night as founders, right? Because there's always something that keeps us up at night. And so we came out of it, and now like Testio is growing, and it's it was a very sad time for Testio, but now it's like it has a growing momentum, and it's really exciting times. And so where I wanted to get with my story was that within those years we started building like the true core values of Testio. We came up with a mission, like why are we here, like why do we do those things we're here, like as I said, time is limited for all of us, so when we want to attract talent globally, like they want to connect with this mission, they want to serve other people. And that's I think also one of the key aspects when building like having happier workplaces for people around the world.
Good.
I hope you got my point.
And trust is, of course, crucial, especially in crisis. And now when we have this COVID pandemic, and it's reflecting businesses, people all over the world, and many businesses are struggling, and well, some other are doing, as we know, very well also. But when we were talking about the Nordic countries being quite similar in many ways. And also, I would say, Estonia is very similar in many respects to the Nordic countries. But when it comes to this COVID crisis, then one country has had a different strategy than the other ones, and that is Sweden. And with quite tragic results, relatively speaking, a lot of people that suffered and it cost a lot of lives. You are, Ulf, you are a Swede. Do you think that this will have any impact on trust in Sweden, in politicians, in governments in the future? Or is this just like a one-timer?
That is a very good question, and the verdict is still out. I would say that, as I see it, it's not the strategy as such that will impact how people view the government and the state. It is sort of the responsibility that they take. That is the key thing, I would say. That is the mechanism that I would say in relation to the COVID crisis and how that will impact the population's trust in the government. The verdict is still out, but it will have an impact, that I'm sure.
Generally speaking, when I would say that businesses have, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they have been fairly pleased with what in the countries, generally speaking, what the governments have been doing in order to safeguard the people. But now you can clearly see a shift and a move that people are, of course, they are getting tired of this pandemic. But also, since some are suffering so much, how do you think is this? Don't they trust the governments anymore, or what is this about?
Yes, we never know. When we make decisions, it's very seldom that we are able to know that what would have happened if we had another kind of decision. And I think it's not about so much trust in game in this fighting with the pandemic. It's just, like you said, it's people are getting tired. So we see that, okay, now we just have to be tight and struggle with this next goal with few months, and then we are all free from it. And there have been so many disappointments, and new versions of this virus are appearing. But when it comes to the level of trust in an organization, I think it is. We can see it in this pandemic also, that how much fake news there are around, and how this trust towards government is actually very, very crucial for small countries like Estonia and Finland and Sweden to maintain their independence, so that the people are united in such a small country. And unfortunately, we can see that there is polarization of opinions, and it's very easy to give fake news and direct people towards not trusting their governments.
Ulf,
I think that is very important. The last point here, when you mentioned Estonia earlier, and I checked the figures before coming here, and Estonia is quite high up on the level of social trust, just behind Switzerland and before the UK. In the top 5-6 countries in Europe, actually, and which is a bit surprising, actually, coming from the history that Estonia comes from with the Soviet Union and so on and so forth. It shouldn't be so high, but it is. And I was thinking, why is that? And you brought up one important aspect of it, and that is the growth of GDP, because it's people who are rich, they can afford to trust other people. But it isn't necessarily that way. It's not always that way. Look at the US. They have become richer and richer, and trust levels go down all the time. And it's polarization because they don't feel like a unit anymore. They are not integrated with each other in the population.
The gap between like rich and poor is becoming like bigger and bigger, right?
That,
which I'm so worried about, like when I look at the economies all over the world. Like I spent in the beginning of the year, I was in South Africa for about 3 months, and due to COVID, like so many people lost their jobs, and then on the other hand, I see all these companies, like there's like when I open up my LinkedIn on a daily basis, I see there's another company doing an IPO, somebody's raising again like $100 million with $1 billion valuation, and people are becoming more rich. But that, on the other hand, like there's so many people that are suffering, like, what's going to happen?
Yes, so that is a very good point. There is the polarization between the rich getting richer and poor getting poorer, but it also the political divide, which is so extremely strong in the US. But then going back to Estonia, I also looked at how do people trust the government in Estonia, because that is a crucial factor in how people get the general trust, how they trust each other. And people actually seem to trust the government in Estonia quite high, much higher than in the other Baltic states.
When was that report done?
Yeah, no, some are a little bit suspicious over that, but, yeah. But
yeah,
it's a good figures. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, for me,
but,
it's always...
But if we move on from then to trust and happiness in private life... Are these concepts valid in your private life as well?
I don't know where to start. Well, I am...
You said that you think of business all the time at home as well. So.
No. Well, I used to think about business all the time at home as well because I started my company with my husband. Well, we've been together for about 11 years, out of which we've been married for about 5 years. We have two little kids and when I think about trust in my personal life and happiness in personal life, then it all again comes down to communication, transparency, speaking your heart and like just being vulnerable and like not hiding anything. And it's exactly the same thing that I was telling you when I described the life at Teslia, right? Like we are just who we are and we're kind and we challenge ourselves and it's just who we are and we don't hide anything and I'm very happy. Like I have a very happy life. Like obviously with entrepreneurship you have your lows and highs but otherwise overall I feel that within those past couple of years I've just let myself be who I am and it's really good to be in this point.
What about you, Jari-Pekka?
Yes, I think the nature of work has changed a lot. 100 years ago, they thought that by 2000, people don't need to work at all because machines will do all the work. And also computers at some time thought that, okay, they will save a lot of time from us. And yet the result is exactly the opposite, that we have a lot of work and because of the computers we can work everywhere. We are more mobile than any ever. But at the same time, really, of course, machines have outplaced people from work life tremendously. And the nature of work has changed. So the borders from private life and work life, they are very foggy. And that thus I don't see that how it is possible to be motivated and innovative if you are not happy also in your private life. It definitely will have drawbacks because you will get tremendously good ideas when you're fishing or rowing your boat or doing whatever, and because our subconscious is working with those topics that are really close to our heart and we are motivated to solve or think about. So I don't see that there are any differences. I think leadership also, it starts about leading yourself so that you are aware what is making you really happy and why you are making certain decisions in your life. And that's when you are able to lead yourself, then I think it's only then when you are able to genuinely lead other people.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that you bring up the historical perspective because actually a big part of my PhD a long time ago was about, let's say the third industrial revolution in the 20s and 30s and how they viewed the technological change at that time. And it's exactly like you said, they thought they would never get their jobs back and things will change so much. But in these days, we work more than ever. And we have a hard time with the work-life balance. I'm pretty sure the fourth industrial revolution will change things dramatically, but I'm not sure which way it will go, but it will be different. I'm pretty sure of that. On another level, speaking about more on a personal happiness, I'm very glad to work in an organization where you're given trust. They trust you and they respect you and the leadership is not very hierarchical and you have allowed to have a good work-life balance and so on and so forth. That is a source of happiness in my life, apart also from my family, of course, and being exposed to good leadership and organizations that actually work.
It's an interesting that I think within those years and with technology and now a lot of people working from home, it's like the work-life balance has become an issue for a lot of people, but it's also important that, as Ari-Pekka said, you have to drive your own decisions and you have to, this is your life, you are responsible for it. Like, you make it what you want it to be. If you want to be happy, then, just do it. And yeah, just take the responsibility. You are the CEO of your life.
That's a good one. Based on what we have discussed today, what key points do you would like to highlight? What should we all bear in mind and start doing today in order to achieve a meaningful and prosperous and sustainable and good life?
Well, for me, when I think back, like before I started my own company and I came from a rather like difficult childhood, like what has led me to this point where I am today, it's all about like communication and sharing my concerns and sharing my challenges and sharing like being vulnerable to like in front of my friends or in front of my family, like not trying to hide myself and just being truly who I am. Like what I've seen happening within these recent years that we have all these Instagrams and TikToks, like it has made people believe that life is always perfect and then you should be too. But I think it's time to just drop the drop that perfect life illusion and just know that imperfect is also just perfect. And life is all about ups and downs. And just, communicate, be transparent, be yourself. And that's my advice.
That's a good
very
one.
Very simple.
That's a good one.
Yeah, if I follow that, then I think it's important to how we interpret things that happen to us. They don't have that much meaning as we give to them, or they can have different meaning than we at first sight have to when we meet difficulties, for example, or somebody in our opinion tries to insult us or whatever, then there mustn't be an immediate reaction to this kind of an impulse. And that's Viktor Frankl's famous findings on concentration camp. What are the cornerstones for happiness? I followed somehow intuitively. I followed ikigai sort of structure in my life. I wanted to continuously learn something and at the same time to give back, and that gives a purpose to and sort of personal mission. And my mission has been, since most of the time we spend on the workplaces, when we are awake at least, then it is very much dependent on the leadership on the workplace, that how we feel, that how happy we are in our life, and how resultfulness this work at workplace is, then it gives happiness to the stakeholders of the organization. So it starts from personal mission and mastery on the field that you are truly interested in, and then willingness to give in order to receive something. So I think this is ikigai is worth a concept to study. If you, I would recommend that. And what else? I think if you want to recommend something, I think Marcus Aurelius' Meditations is an interesting source for self-exploration, that from a person that wrote these notes to himself in order to be a better person. So this is giving us interesting guidelines that I think can bring happiness on personal level.
Thank you, Jari-Pekka. Ulf?
So many wise and intelligent things said already, so I don't know what to add, but maybe a perspective on this, and that is thinking in a long-term perspective, not in a short-term perspective. And if you think in a long-term perspective, you start to read philosophers like the Greek philosophers, you listen to music, and you read important books. So maybe that.
Thanks. Dear listeners, this has been a Nordic Sustainable Economy podcast series delivered by Nordic Council of Ministers. Big thanks to our wonderful and knowledgeable guests. It has really been a pleasure to discuss with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nordic Sustainable Economy Podcast Series, delivered by Nordic Council of Ministers.